contact, session number 28773, Reel 1.
Good evening, Mr. Sim.
Good evening.
I was just going to ask you some more questions about our last recording. And one of them was the boat that took you from Britain across to Egypt.
Yes.
Where about did your one stop? Was it Cape Town or Durban?
Oh, Durban, yes.
And did you get off for anything?
Yes, we were off, I think, about 7 days. And we had to march over a racetrack in Durban, and that's where we were accommodated, shall we say. Again, under the stars, around the race course. We did a bit of training there every day, a route march, in the forenoons. In the afternoon, we had free, gave us time to get into Durban, going to Durban. And we were paid, a payment each day, you know, or a small amount. I think that it was 10, maybe say 10 shillings each day we were off to spend. But the South Africans were quite good, very hospitable to us, you know. And, at least one day you were there, there were people waiting to take you out, you know, treat you to a lunch or, you know, just take you around. And I remember it was there was four women in the party, four ladies, so they took about eight of us, you know, round about and treated us to a meal and a drink and that, and just a little chat, and that is it, yeah. And the rest of the time we were left, you know, that was been well organized so that everyone had been entertained one way or another, at least once in that time. So the rest of time we made our, you know, had a walk around Durban and various places, you know, downtown, and met some Scots people too, you know, at that, and they stopped and spoke to you. And I remember one guy telling me he came from Cornhill, and that was in Banffshire, you know, between Banff and Portsoy, but inland a bit, you know, so quite interested to hear him speaking. Promise you a job, you know, if ever you come back to South Africa, they would employ you. Yes. So that is it. Yeah, it's great. And then, as I said, every day we did a little march. Then the day came when we were go back to the boat. So we marched, got our kit out again and marched back to the boat. Handed in your weapons into the ship's armoury and that. And we were set sail again for, we didn't even know, I didn't know where we were going at that time. What I've learned quite recently, within the last 15 years, that we were originally destined for India, but with Tobruk having fallen, you know, and things were very dangerous in the way for the British troops, we were being chased back nearly to Cairo. We were diverted from our original destination back to Egypt. So, quite easy to move us, you know. We're all in the boat, so diversion, and we didn't actually know where we were going, India. So, that's where we landed up in Egypt. We landed at a place called Port Tewfik, or Port Said, you know. And disembarked. At that time, there was no real harbour as such, so you came off a boat onto what they called a lighter, a thing like a barge, a sort of flat barge. And from there, they were pulled into the shore, either by a tugboat or that. You know. So, again, you had to wait, once you disembarked, you know, to make your way to a sort of railway siding where you entrained to go. This all took time, you know, there were hours you were waited until everyone that in the unit came off the boat, you know, and got there. And so the place we were called was Kassassin, and you either spelt it K-A-S-S-E as an assassin, or Q-U, like you'll notice it when you speak about Al-Qaeda, as either Q-U, you know, but the Q-U is pronounced like a K, so that's Kassassin, which was a tented camp, quite big. It had latrines and the showers, you know. The latrines were dry. They were very deep latrines that had been dug. So, and they were, well, the natives, the British Army had trained the natives, you know, how to keep things clean, you know. The Royal Engineers sort of run these labour camps, as you call them. So they kept the latrines and for the sanitation wise done. So that, I'm sure they were there about fortnight, 3 weeks, and you were underneath the showers. No, there's fairly plenty of water at that time, so you always need a shower just to keep cool. And the tents were built, you know, the dug, they had been dug about a foot down. Again, this was the help you escape a blast from bombing or things like that, you know. So that's it. Anyway, about 3 weeks in that camp, the threat of the Germans getting nearer Cairo got better. So we moved up nearer Cairo in a defensive position, you know. But this, the Germans never broke through the line, you know, so we moved from there up nearer the battlefront, and just fairly close to the line, really, and stuck around there maybe a week, you know, before the big battle itself started. And then the night came, or the day came, when it was the real thing, you know. And sometimes you get a different attitude creeps into you. No one, there's nothing said about that. Psychologically, it does, you know, this is, you know, you go back to training days, battle simulation when live firing that, but this was going to be rough, real, and you get a bit apprehensive. Well, I did. And speak to blokes afterwards, they were apprehensive too, you know, because they knew that some of them would come through and some wouldn't, you know. Who would it be? So that is it. And so, of course, and then the battle, as I said, wore to and fro in a way. The first some days it was to and fro, you know, you had the attack. And after that, you seem to be getting on the winning side. You get this feel, or the way just things are going, that you're going to win, you know, just, which it eventually did. And I reckon it was the 4th of October that we broke through. That's my date. A reason ago for that, the Australians who were next to us, you know, the Australian division, they were going home. They knew they had been told after this battle, we'll be going back to Australia. So they were celebrating, you know, and they let off VV lights and just all sort of firing guns ad hoc, just to make a noise, celebrating, okay, that's it. And they did, they went back and we went across the desert.
That was 4th of October?
Yes, from the 23rd of October to the 4th of November. Uh-huh. 4th, 5th, I would say the 4th. And this was partly Guy Fawkes night, was the 5th, you know. So they were kind of celebrating the tour, going back, and okay, Guy Fawkes will be a day earlier. And just the things. And that same day, you know, we've always been the heat and everything, it rained. And it came down like a sheet of water, you know. And, you know, like stores, when it builds up into, it is exactly the opposite. It turned the sand into, you got bogged down with it. But, you got soaked. There was no point in trying to keep it dry, because you couldn't. And the water's really wet. But and then a lot of our vehicles and trucks got bogged down, you know. And we're all trying to advance, get onto the roadway, you know, the coastal road. Anyway, we overcame that, but that had blocked us. I think, had it not been for that rain, we might have beat the Germans at Tel Amin. Well, just my opinion.
That was in 1942, was it?
Yes, aye. And then...
Were you taking prisoners as well then?
Beg pardon?
Were you taking prisoners as well at El
Alamein? Oh yes, we took a lot, especially Italians. But we got some quite a number of Germans too. But the Italians, you got so well. The South Africans, they got the escort, the prisoners. You know, there were so many. They did it the armored cars, and they were running back along the line. I'll tell you a little story about the Italians I saw. You see. I saw this long line of Italians, and before that, when I was still at school, there was always an Italian family, fish and chips or ice cream, had a shoppy in a little locality, and we had two in Tariff. And I went to school with one, Joe Saprini, that is a boy's name, and I could have sworn I saw Joe amongst this long line of prisoners. I was too frightened to break ranks, because these South Africans, they were a bit boorish. You know, they wouldn't have too kindly tried to speak to a prisoner on the line of work. But I'm sure I saw Joe in this line. They had gone back to Italy a year before the war started, because by this time there was good reports coming out of Italy, oh, a wonderful country, you know, time. So they went back to Italy, and here he was, he'd been called up. That was 1938, this was 1942, you know, 4 years, but I never got a chance, and as I said, I've never been back to Italy, and I've never seen him back in this country, to see if it was him or not, but there's a likeness. Anyway, so I digress, that is my thoughts about Joseph Freely. I don't know how I'd have reacted had I got to speak to him, you know, I would just say, "You don't hear Joe, you know, he might have said the same thing to me." so that is a little thing that you see.
And we agreed earlier that your section on El Alamein that I recorded some time ago, we were going to fit into this section, so.
Oh, that's right.
That's what we'll do, if that's okay with you.
Right, though.
Another questions I had was, you spoke about Tripoli when you were doing some labouring work.
Yes.
What type of thing did they have you doing?
Well, loading boats, loading or mainly unloading boats, you know. And also, like, the enemy leaves things in a state that you can't use. So this had to be repaired. So maybe clearing roadways of debris, just for one's sake, you know. So you did that, and again, unloading boats, mainly unloading. So that's what I. And then you have your guards to do, you know, you always drive. And again, to keep yourself smart and things like that, you've got training during the day, and just revision and just revising your various things. Things you had learned maybe on really active service, snags you'd come up against, you know. So that's, yes.
And when you say that, you know, like the enemy had left, debris on the road, had they blown up any bridges or anything?
Yes, well, houses and things like that, you know, things that may have been of use to us, you know, they tried to make them unusable to you. So they would, so that it would hold back your advance, you know, because you'd always think to attend to before you could advance any further.
And what about minefields? You know how
many... A minefield.
Had you ever cleared them?
Yes, we sometimes had. Although, by this time, they had mine detectors, and the engineers, they used the mine detectors. They'd been trained how to use them. There were times when they went out to clear a minefield, we would go as a protective enemy. We would go out further away, you know, and in case the Germans spotted them and attacked them. So we went out to give them covering fire, or just to cover the time they were clearing minefields. But there were times when we had to go and take your bayonet and prod the ground, you know. The mines at this time were teller mines. They were quite big, the size of a soup plate, you know, and the weight of a man, we couldn't put them off. There's always times and that they were late for. So with the result, you could sort of, well, the chance you maybe walk over the top, but you went slow and dug the ground as you made it. You'd hear the clink, clink, if you made it stuck something metal. And then you would mark it as you would come and lift the detonator off it, you know. So that's the sort of, that we did, you know, the minefield.
And what did you mark it with, like, did you have something to...
Well, you could have left your bayonet stuck in, but at this time with the engineers, someone close by, you had given a shout, you know, they struck something here.
Okay. And you mentioned also that when you were in Tripoli, Churchill came along.
Yes.
Did you hear him or anything, Dina? Did you actually hear him or anything?
Oh, yes. He gave a little talk. His pep talk was, you know, if in the years to come you are asked by your children or your grandchildren, it will be enough. What did you do in the war, Dad or Granddad? It will be enough for you to say, oh, I marched with 8th Army. It will become a household word. That is his words that Churchill used. You know. Always remember that, don't it? So that is what he said. Amongst other things, I don't think, but that is the main part of his talk, yeah.
And did you think he gave you inspiration or anything?
Oh, yes, he was inspiration. Oh, I did hear him being catcalled by, no, blokes who didn't like the army or something, you know. Some blokes were very rude about them, you know. Usually they were being put in the jail, but this time they were ignored, you know. Yes.
Okay. And you spoke the last time as well about Tunisia and the various battles that you had in, well, you were involved with there.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
And, you know, Al-Wadi Akarat.
Yes, I.
And do you think by this time as well that you kind of had a feeling that, you know, the Germans were going back?
Yes, oh yes, well, you knew by the ground you had covered, you know, and it appeared to me that every battle you entered into, you were going to win, you know, because... can't think in any one where we were actually chased back. You know, he was held up for a while, but there may be someday a little retreat, you know, but not much. So, but overall, you had this feeling, okay, you're going into it. Although you had this apprehensive feeling of apprehension, you know, will I come out of it alive? So that is it. Yes, yeah, there was this creeping in. And the support you are getting from the Air Force, it's like, you know, all of it. Although if you were getting shelled and bombed, you know, you never thought it like that, you know. Where's the Air Force there?
And did the Air Force give you a lot of support? Did they generally go in first, you know, or what happened?
Well, they would have bombed where they called the defensive, you know, maybe behind at the rear in front. But there was one time... And this was at Alameda. I was quite impressed. I saw this formation that it was a daylight raid, you know, and you could near see the bombs dropping from our Air Force onto the enemy positions, you know. So, again, so that was one effort that I could remember, you know. But overall, yes, the Air Force was quite busy in the skies, you know.
Was there ever a fight between the two air forces, you know, like the Germans?
Yeah, sorry, I don't fight. I can't say, I don't remember actually seeing one. Maybe he did see, but from a distance, you know, not just directly overhead.
Okay.
And
the last recording that you did as well, you spoke about in Sicily. I think this was July 1943, would it?
Yes, that's right.
And you said that you got kitted out in Sicily, well, or kitted out for Sicily. And I wondered what the difference was, what the, you know, the kit, the different
yes.
kit they were giving you.
Well, I think... In Tunis, or that, a part of Tunis, where we got into... Well, before Tripoli, we got into battle dress, you know, we sort of... And when they kept the battle dress, a part of it, right up, you know, would have started going back into KD, you know, but April of that, you know. So by which time we were, well, out of getting near the end of Tunis, you know, it finished about May. And we had also moved out of the line. We had gone to a place called the Jelly in North Africa, well, in Tunisia, something like that. Again, it's a little thing you won't see in the map. Well, most maps, maybe some. So, and during the training there, yes, we got that worked out the different, you know, the way of, you know, and this flanlet shirt was part of your job. Keep your shorts, keep your KD longs and that.
Okay.
That's right, yeah. Still capable ball bonnet, you know, never changed, you know, summer and winter, that's one we kept, you know. And yes, of course, your steel helmet, you had to wear it. So I think that's all. And the type of equipment, which equipment you would carry, and I think it went on the big park so that we had sort of self-contained for a few days, you know, with various spare uniform, a change of clothing, shall we say. Had to carry a blanket around this big park, you know, so that is the various things about it. Your equipment for ammunition is that I kept your rifle, it was the same.
Okay. And you mentioned wearing shorts as well then.
Yeah.
Does that mean that you wouldn't have, like, say, your big coat with you?
That's right, yes.
Okay. And you also mentioned Malta, and I was wondering what you thought about Malta.
Yes. Well, it's a fine bit of a change. There wasn't much vegetation that I saw. But again, Malta, well, the latter was a reasonably big town, you know. And although Russians weren't a lot plentiful, you know, the rest of that, I forget. If you got into the what you got to eat, you know, merely, or they had that type of beer that you would have drunk, you know. I was a beer man at that time. So you got me a soft drink like orangeade or things like that. No, just a change. Wasn't much variety, things that. And so, well, I think the Salvation Army and they had canteens. They were able to put up a canteen where you could buy a cup of tea and a wad, you know, maybe a bun or things like that. It was a strange thing. But again, it was a change, and you're always a bit hungry. You could always eat, so you could get a cup of tea, maybe a sausage in between, things like that. Like sausage and mash with a good diet, and it always seemed to be available at these canteens. And that. So, you know, the Salvation Army, Church of Scotland, too, did a good job with their mobile canteens, you know. Always seemed to come round at 10 o'clock or something, it used a break time, you know. And
what about Malta at the time? Was it badly damaged?
Yes, it had got a lot of bombing, you know. Although when we were there, we had an air raid, but they weren't so frequent, you know. We did get bombed during that time. But as I said, they weren't nearly so frequent as they had been.
And how were the people? Do you remember how, were they suffering from all what happened to
them? No, they put up with it, like they had to. I didn't speak a lot to the civilian population, you know. They seemed to. We kept to ourselves in some ways, you know, and so did the civil population. Apart if you got into town and they just moved around, language was a problem. We're not good at languages, you know, never. Although a lot of the Maltesers could speak reasonable English.
Okay, and there was another section where you mentioned that General Montgomery came and talked.
Yes.
Do you remember anything about that?
Oh, yes. The day he came, you know, we were all lined up, you know. There was three battalions that he came to the brigade. There was the 5th Black Watch, they were in our brigade. first Gordon, fifth, seventh Gordon, open square, and they drove him in his jeep, you know, it stood up in the middle, and of course, he said, hey, guide us round, you see, so we were all lined up, it was in the big ranks, as you see, what's the RSM, so that we'd all had us all lined up. So he got out loud, you know, any good Irishman amongst you? Oh, yes, yes. All feeling fine, are you? Feeling fit, etc. Oh, yes, yes, oh, well. Oh, yes, oh, well, that's good. You'll need to be fit, or things like that. But and that was about his chat, that I can remember, you know. And then he went to me, without telling us where we'd be going, you know. Oh, he probably said, we're doing a good job, you know, you're probably, we're all winning, and that will probably hit the enemy for six, and that. Things like that. So that's it, and the way he went. And then, a few days later, we went on the boat, and that was heading for Sicily. So we never knew. Well, I never knew where we were going until we were on the boat, you know. So, but there you go, a fine day when we left Sicily, sea calm, sun shining, piper, you know, just a farewell, either cock in the north and sun, pipe dews like that, you know, farewell to the creeks and so on. And yes, but then, by nightfall, the sea, the weather had changed really rough at that. And I got seasick, you know, so seasick, I didn't guess where I was, you know, just wanted off this boat, and what sort of reception would we get, I didn't want to, just had to get off the boat. With the result that when we did beach, you know, we rammed on, coming down the ramp, you know, we had to come down, we had to double, I tripped, you know, and I fell into the water. But the immediate cure for seasickness, I felt good after that. No, he rise up dripping wet, as you'd understand. And first guys I saw, there was a group of officers standing round a person lying on the ground, and this was our commanding officer. He'd been shot, you know, so he couldn't take any further part in the action. He did sort of sit up and wave your stick and get moving, you know, get away, right up the onto the beaches, you know. Don't stand and look at these sort of business. So this is Colonel Hayes, Scrappy Hayes, they call him.
And whereabouts was this in Sicily that you landed?
At Pechino. There's a point, lower, that's probably the nearest point to Malta, really, but Ponte Pechino, that's a point at Pachino. And that's where, in that area, that's where we landed. And as I said, once we got on there, we kept going, you know. And the first place we were, a reasonable sized town up near it was Ragusa. And on our way there, we'd sent out a patrol, you know, to find out where enemy was. And here, a couple of hours, the patrol had was taken prisoner. We soon had made contact with the enemy, you know. So that was, boys, the. They were prisoners for the rest of the war. You know. They weren't all taken prisoners. Some of them were able to escape, you know. But there was one chap, he'd only joined us at the beginning of May, you know, and his first bit of action, he was taken prisoner. He felt it rough. Anyway, as we carried on, past Ragusa, up to Vicini, a bit of action up there, you know, but got a lot of prisoners too at Vicini, or Vicini. And so we carried on, you know, And by this time, the harbour at Syracuse had been captured, and this opened up the harbour, and which meant that the boats, the big boats, could get in with stores, ammunition, rations, and everything. So this under transport, you know, the transport we required. So instead of massing, we were able to go by transport.